Yeah.
House Finance and Center Finance. We're going to listen to the revenue forecast from the Department of Revenue. We have today with us Vincent Wright, Mr. Messenger, and Mr. Adenzo. And to start off, we'll have Mr. Wright make a presentation. And if anyone has any questions at any time, just interrupt.
Chairman Steichen, Mr. Cooper, and members of the House and Finance Committee. This morning, I will talk about the revenue projections for fiscal year 78 and fiscal year 79. Following my presentation, Mr. Messenger, the Deputy Commissioner of Taxation, be addressing a few issues related to taxes that will be confronting you this year. Following Mr. Messenger will be Jimmy Denzo, who is our Deputy Commissioner of Treasury, and he is going to address the performance of the Treasury Department during the last year, as well as the permanent fund. I would like to direct your attention, if I may, to the yellow booklet that you should have on the table before you. If you'll take a look at the second page of Section E, I'm going to deal with the top 10 categories listed on that page, which the Department of Revenue was forecast. You might want to follow along with this page because it might be a little difficult to read some of the numbers on the charts up there from a distance. I should say that the department will from now on be issuing a forecast every quarter. The next one out will be March 15th. The reason for this is because of constantly changing conditions. As you know, a forecast can change radically overnight due to the unexpected, such as a explosion of pump station 8. The bottom line figure that we're forecasting is found in your revenue source book, the little blue book. We are forecasting for fiscal year 78 a total of $759,084.8 million in unrestricted revenue. We are forecasting for fiscal year 79 a figure of $928,483.7 million. Now, I might add that these figures are net. In other words, they are after the permanent fund and the native claims payment has been deducted. The first particular tax I'd like to concentrate on this morning is the reserves tax. If you look up here, you can see the chart we've made up for you. As you know, it was only a two-year tax. We took in a total of $493.7 million during that two-year period. This tax no longer applies to fiscal year 78 on. The tax itself is to be credited back against the severance tax until the complete amount is taken care of. On severance taxes, we're forecasting for fiscal year 78 $113.5 million, and for fiscal year 79, we're forecasting $176 million. These are net figures. In other words, the reserve tax credit has been applied.
How much was that credit?
The credit, for example, fiscal year 78 is roughly
$113.5 million.
How many years are you going to apply the credit then?
The credit will expire in approximately 4 to 5 years. the entire amount of $493.7 million will then have been deducted. In other words, 50% per year until it is taken care of.
Wouldn't that just make 2 years?
Can you explain that to me? 50% of half?
Each year 50% of whatever's remaining?
That's correct.
It'll never go to zero, will it?
The 50% of 7 tax liability. Okay, the oil and gas property tax is forecast to be $168.3 million in fiscal year 78 and $170.6 million in fiscal year 79. As you know, there's a 20 mil tax levied against the pipeline pumping station terminal. Now, I might say that this figure does not take into consideration for us any gas lines, because that will be a little further down the road. But once that does occur, we'll see an upward revision in these projections.
Have you subtracted from that the rebate to municipalities?
Yes.
That's the net to the state.
Right.
How much is the rebate to municipalities?
I'm not sure the exact amount, but it's based on a 1500 capita figure. I can get that information for you if you'd like to.
I'd like to back up, because I do want to understand, and I don't understand the thing about the credit. $113 million is not 50% of 493. So my understanding must be wrong. Are you taking 50% of what the liability would be that year?
It's 50% of the severance tax liability.
Oh, I see.
Not the amount of the reserve.
Not the reserve liability.
The individual income tax, we're forecasting a drop from fiscal year 77 to fiscal year 78. In fiscal year 77, we collected $210.4 million. We're forecasting a take of $135 million in fiscal year 78, and a take of $145 million in fiscal year 79. The reason why we're forecasting a drop here is, number one, the overall average wage rate has now dropped since completion of the Alaska Pipeline project. In other words, at one time we were talking about very high salaries that dragged the overall average wage rate up. If that drops, so does withholding, so does the net individual income tax rate. Another reason for it is the employment is leveling off, or has leveled off since the completion of the project.
Last year, when we had the revenue forecast, if I recall, in your projections that you had made for 76 and 77, you had to reevaluate those because they were extremely low for those years, because you did not know how many people were working on the pipeline. So there was a great jump in last year's reevaluation of the forecast. Again, this year you're coming into the same situation where you were extremely low again and had to increase it for the individual income taxes. What basis are you going on now to indicate that it's going to be extremely low for next year? It seems to me that your history of forecasting individual income taxes is not very good.
There's basis for dropping it this year as compared to what was actually taken last year. It's again due to the drop in the average wage rate and the leveling off of employment results of taking time for. We are now after resorting to an econometric model which entails the input of our own variables. In other words, we don't have to rely so much on outside agencies for collection of data that goes into that. A few years ago we did have that problem. We met with oil companies and no fault of their own. The data was faulty. That was one of the reasons for it. Now, this year, if you'll note, we have, we might look at the source book, we've already revised upward our 78 projections to $135 from $93 million. And the reason we're advising them up is we don't feel that the overall economic activity is dropping off as much as we originally anticipated.
But your revision for this year is based again on that model that you're utilizing?
This year it's based on the model. Prior years there was no such model. Now, after a completion of a year or so, we'll know how well the model is set. And as I indicated earlier, we will be revising these figures every quarter. March 15th will be the next one. If you recall, last year we met with you and revised our 77 forecast upward from the original figure of 191 million to, I believe, 204 million.
Mm-hmm.
Corporate income tax is projected to increase from the actual take of $35.8 million in fiscal year 77 to $44.6 million in fiscal year 78 and $65.6 million in fiscal year 79. Yeah.
According to the source book, then, you had to revise that the corporate income tax downward by about $9 million.
That's right. I think the corporate income tax projection is based on existing law, as all of these projections are. We found out that the existing corporate income tax law has many loopholes in it. One time, we anticipated a little more than we should have. So I would say that this might even be an optimistic forecast to the existing law. That's why, as you well know, we put in the hopper last year and maybe asking that the law be revised from that. In other words, we would like to see the book income value adopted. We would like to see the sales factor or the three factors in the law replacing the extraction.
So the reduction is not due to a reduction in corporate activity, but just in your miss. You get higher, and as the law is currently, less revenue comes in. Is that what you're saying?
Well, put it this way: we feel the law has so many loopholes that we're not going to need to collect more than what we forecast to do. Now, if we do, we'll be pleasantly surprised.
Mr. Chairman, the reason why the corporate income rises sharply from FY 78 and while individual income tax projections sink is mostly because of taxes that you expect to recover from the oil companies. Is that right?
A good portion of that, yes.
Okay. Okay. Is that rather optimistic view that you've got up there? Is that borne out from the past history of taxing the income of oil companies, or you just figure That's how much you get, or what?
I think that's an optimistic view. What we did was apply a three-factor formula to each one of the companies. The view of our past experience, I think this would be the optimistic view of what we would expect to generate there. The next chart is the investment earnings. We've forecasted an increase from the actual of fiscal 77, which was 34.9, to $45.1 million in fiscal year 78 and $51.5 million in fiscal year 79. This is a combination of two things. One, better performance in the Treasury Department compared to prior years. And secondly, due to the fact that we're going to have larger revenue in the general fund. I'm going to use those for what I've been.
What does this include? Things like veterans loans and this sort of thing. It's not just the short term investment of surplus, and it's just all the loan funds and that sort of thing.
Right.
The Mason General Fund.
Right. Okay. I'm not one of the best experienced in people overall. We've got a return of about 6.75%, which is pretty good in view of the fact that we are required to buy, let's say, loans that certain banks would accept.
Mr. Chairman, I want to ask a question.
Ernie, go ahead.
What's the total, could you, off the top of your head, give me a figure on the total amount of money that the state has out on loans, the tourism loans, debt loans, fish boat loans, the whole bundle? Is that figure available?
I can't, but you might be able to address similar questions to Mr. Benzel. You might have a better handle on that than I do. He'll delve into the subject a little bit more.
Fred, good question?
No. No.
All right, the actual take the business license pass fiscal year 77 was $23.2 million. We're forecasting a slight downward trend. Fiscal year 78, we're projecting $21.8 million. And then fiscal year 79, we're projecting $20.4 million. This is just a slight drop compared to what was actually taken in fiscal year 77. Only about $2 to $3 million. Next chart is the highway fuel tax here.
Back on the gross business license tax. Your revised estimate for this year for 78 is 21, 28 is 79 is 20.4 million. How much of that goes to the staff municipalities?
Approximately
60%. Taking 60% of that would be round figures.
On highway fuel taxes, the actual take fiscal year 77 was $20.2 million, using $16.7 million. We are forecasting a take of $13.2 million for fiscal year 78 and $12.8 million for fiscal year 79. The primary reason for the drop off in highway fuel taxes is, of course, the completion of the pipeline. As you know, we have 8 cents a gallon. The off-highway rebate factor is filed for is 6 cents per gallon. We no longer have the pipeline activity out there at the extent that we did a year ago. So this is the reason why the sharp drop-off in highway fuel taxes. Beverage tax, actual take for fiscal year 77 was $8 million. We're forecasting a take of $6.8 million in fiscal year 78 and a take of $6.7 million in fiscal year 79. This particular tax, along with most of them that have been presented this morning, are generated from our economic model. I would say that the reason for the drop-off here is the leveling off in economic activity compared to what took place with the pipeline project.
Oh, yeah. I don't
believe that at all.
Do you think there's going to be a decline in population in Alaska?
No idea.
What factors does the model take into consideration? And just the reduction in general economic activity figure is going to be a reduction in
purchasing of alcohol beverages then?
Yeah, for example, we have
dinners and things are going down.
All kinds of variables going into it, such as the consumer price index for Anchorage, employment, my industry, personal income, wage rates, and so forth. All these things, as they feed back into the equation for the model, indicate leveling off and take some revenue to it. Now, the opposite prevails in other cases, for example, the corporate income tax. But again, that's primarily to the oil.
Was the change in procedures then over to the econometric model the reason for the revised 78 estimate, too? I mean,
yes, it is.
Mr. Chairman, you said that there's no reduction in population. You mean no reduction in residential population? Because certainly people who work in the pipeline, certainly many of them have left.
That's true. I'm saying just population as a whole. I don't think there's going to be much of a drop. We still have quite a few of those who work on the pipeline that are still here drawing those points.
Are they then becoming residents? So in fact, the residential population has increased.
I can give you a personal opinion. I think many of them are. Yes, in anticipation of, let's say, the gas plant project. Now we do know that employment has dropped overall compared to years ago.
Did your department get into that kind of? Is that population kind of thing incorporated in your model?
Yes, it is. If you'd like some specifics on what we're forecasting quarter by quarter for population or employment by particular type of industry, I'll be glad to provide you that information. This last chart here is the cigarette tax. The top line is the total expected take from the fiscal year 77. We actually took in 4.8 million. In the fiscal year 78, we're forecasting 4.3 million. And in fiscal year 79, 4 million. The drop off is only $800,000 from the actual take 77 to the projected take 79. The second line here is the amount of tax that goes to the school fund. That's set up by statute. That's approximately 60%.
Yeah, is that the use tax? It doesn't correspond to your I must be looking in the wrong place. I wonder if you could help me out. The sale and use on tobacco products, that you're talking about? We've got 1.6 million.
Which page are you on?
On page 2, the blue book. About the middle of the page, says sale and use taxes. We've got alcohol, three fuel taxes, and tobacco taxes. Must be another category somewhere. It's corresponding to that lower one there.
Okay, part of it is divided up between special fund and the general fund. That's what you see on page 2 is the general fund portion. Special fund would be page 4, I believe. Excuse me, page 5. It's school fund.
School fund.
Almost the bottom of the page.
Does that all come from the tobacco tax and the school fund? All of it?
I believe it does, yes. Approximately 60% of the total goes to the school fund, the rest goes to the general fund.
Thanks.
That completes my portion of the presentation. If there are any other questions, I'd be happy to entertain them.
Mr.
Don?
I'm puzzled about this model deal you got. You say the population is going to increase, but we're not going to take in as much money on booze.
No, I'm not.
So the
population.
So we won't have an alcoholism problem in the future.
I'm not saying population is increasing by any means. I'm saying that it's leveling off. I am saying that employment has dropped. As employment drops, your wages drop. As your wages drop, so does the amount that there is going to spend for any type of good, whether it be alcohol, tobacco, whatever. I should say that spending for certain categories will not drop off as fast as it will for other categories. I mentioned this last year. The economists have termed what they call as an inelasticity. In other words, the certain types of goods that you have to have more or less.
Does your model take into consideration the inelasticity of alcohol, or do you just? I noticed that some of the people I know that are in the restaurant business says that their business has gone down, perhaps. I mean, it would be related to a certain extent to economic activity, because if people don't go out as much, they might not buy as much, say, wine. You go to McDonald's.
Mm-hmm. This is going to cut down on the alcohol problem?
No, I
don't think so.
Why cheap food? Mr. Chairman, could I ask a question while we're talking about special fund fees? We're on page 5 of the blue book. It says the last permanent fund, 1979. 90 million, is that that's the 25%, right?
That's correct.
How much the explosion at the pump station, how much is the estimate that was reduced or would be reduced? Yeah. How does that figure into your projection?
Okay, originally, as a result of that pump explosion, we revised our overall revenue figures downward by approximately $118 million. This is a result of that. Later on, we revised them upward again, primarily because of the individual income tax. So we forecast an overall shortfall in fiscal year 78 of approximately $60 million.
In other words, if it hadn't been for the explosion, it would be $60 million more than the figure shown here, is that what you're saying?
If it hadn't been for the explosion, plus, let's say, what's happened to the tanker there, a few other things we have, I'd say considerably more than $60 million.
Mr. Chairman, I still don't understand. Your estimate for the Alaska Permanent Fund says it's $90 million.
Well, fiscal year
79. And what I want to know, what I would like to know is what your estimate, what effect the explosion had. What would it have been if we hadn't had an explosion? That's what I'm trying to get at.
I don't know, sir. That $118 million loss as a result of the explosion was calculated on both severance taxes and royalties. Now, I can get a specific number for you a little later if you like it, but I do have to calculate what the effect is on the royalty.
Does that affect fiscal 79 or fiscal 78?
Permanent 78 is what I want to say.
I think we're all questions on fiscal 79.
79, we can assume that the pump station will be back on in March. The effect wouldn't amount to much.
On page 2, you did not revise the oil and gas production tax at all, did you? You left it at $113 million?
Yeah, the reason for that is Yeah, are you talking about the gross figure? Or?
I'm talking about the gross of $113 million, five.
Where's the floor there? So we have a floor there that's six sales tax, about 653 right now. There is no such floor for the appliances. So anything like a pump explosion, revision of tariffs, and so forth, at this stage, well, affect primarily appliances. Of course, that affects the permanent fund.
Okay.
The majority of your permanent fund money, as you well know, comes from oil right now. Okay.
Mr. Chairman, I don't know if this is the right time to ask it or not, but what is our net after all costs per barrel of oil that comes out of the state? In other words, after, you know, the without going into detail how the tax is calculated, do you have a figure on the net worth of every barrel of oil that pumps out of pumps through Valdez?
Our figures.
Your figures will change, I understand that, but up to this point, do you have any idea what each barrel of oil is worth net to the state?
I can give you the wellhead value right now, Senator, from two points of view. In other words, we have a West Coast land price and a Gulf Coast land price.
I didn't want to get into all of that, but
what is it? Well, let me give you the wellhead value.
Just that barrel of oil sitting right here, and how much is it worth?
Well,
it's worth in a way of tax revenue to the state.
Okay, I would have to calculate that for you. Let me give you the bottom line figures. But the oil goes to the West Coast. We're talking about a wellhead value of roughly $6.20. I'm talking about royalties now. There's six royalties going on. If it goes to the Gulf Coast, we're talking about a wellhead value of roughly $3.80. Now, let me talk about thermal taxes. The floor is $6.53 per second. Okay? And on the basis of those numbers, I'm going to go ahead and calculate.
I'm still after the net figure. You know, after all transportation costs and all that are out, there must be a net value there somewhere. We have to get all the way into cents per barrel if we're going to talk about it now, but I don't want to stretch it that far.
I can give you that information later if you like. I don't have it in my fingertips right now.
If there's a dollar up there, what share? What part of that buck is our share? In the way of tax.
Can you take that information up for you?
I'd be kind of interested to know. I saw a figure the other day, something about they pumped 100 million barrels of oil through the pipeline. I was just wondering what that netted the state.
You want just the net per barrel?
Yeah, be interested. If it's a penny or 2 bits or what?
$1.25. Any further questions for Mr. Rice? No, thank you.
Okay, Mr. Messenger will be assisting tax and driving.
Chairman, I just want to cover a few miscellaneous items affecting our individual income tax this year. And I want to point out three specific items that were passed by Congress this last year, which the state did not pick up, and therefore will require specific legislative action to incorporate. Two of the items related to credits, and as you know, under our income tax statute, changes to credits or exemptions from tax do not apply for a period of 2 years unless the legislature takes specific action to incorporate them earlier. Two of those items were passed by Congress this last year. One is entitled the New Jobs Credit, which essentially gives an employer a credit for a portion of the wage paid to new employees hired during 1977 and 78. This is just a two-year credit provision enacted by Congress. The second item is a revision in the elderly credit, which is similar to the retirement income credit. Last year, the legislature specifically adopted the previous change to the retirement income credit. This latest change just makes the credit more apply to a greater number of people, and that they can take either the elderly credit or the what was then the old retirement income credit. And these are two changes which we would agree should be adopted for Alaska income tax purposes. And we will be providing the committee with an estimate of what the revenue tax would be. More importantly is the change, not in with regard to credit, but a change which was made to the federal standard deduction, which has a large impact on Alaska this year. Let me just explain what has happened there. In the federal act that passed in 77, eliminated what was called the standard deduction in the federal income tax code. They eliminated the standard deduction, but they plugged in the equivalent of the standard deduction, the equivalent dollar amount per person, right into the federal tax rates themselves, so that for federal purposes, there was no net increase in tax per person. It was just a changing from just changing the deduction from one place to another. So the federal tax rates were reduced by the equivalent amount. For state purposes, it did have an impact on the taxpayer because we incorporate the deduction in the definitions of income and deduction in the federal code. So when the federal government eliminated the standard deduction, we also incorporated that information. But since we did not, we have our own rate structure, our own tax rates separate from the federal government, we did not pick up the reduction in the tax rate. So the net effect is that for Alaskan taxpayers, there will be a loss of that, the equivalent of the standard deduction and an increase in tax liability, unless a specific action is taken. We are proposing to correct this fluke in the change in federal law by a bill which would correct the situation permanently, and that is adopt a standard deduction for Alaskan tax purposes on a permanent basis. And specifically for this year, for tax year 1977, to pass an automatic refund or rebate, which could be mailed directly to the taxpayer automatically by the department without having the taxpayer file an extra piece of paper or a return. It would be an automatic rebate to the taxpayer based upon standard deduction in the law.
Yeah, I'm just going to that you're assuming then that the since people are filling out their taxes right now that it'd have to be a rebate, but we wouldn't change the law in time to allow people to incorporate that change in their filling out of their forms and in their liability.
That's correct. And also we'd like to do a method where we can just do it automatically. Last year, when we passed the child care credit retroactively, and we found that there was not as many people as we anticipated filed for that specific credit. And I think even though we adopted a one-page form and tried to get it out to everybody and had a lot of publicity, there were still a lot of people that didn't take advantage of it. So we think probably the most equitable way of doing it is to do an automatic refund, so people don't have to file a piece of paper to get the benefit. Anticipate that the average amount of tax that for the average amount of rebate would be approximately about $160 per return. So that will be available, will be introduced, and because it was a fluke of federal law and was not meant to be a tax increase, we do that. Quick deliberation of that bill.
Selma?
Yeah. I'd like to ask a question. You said you wanted to see permanent legislation passed concerning this rebate. Yet the tax credit you're talking about on the federal level is going to be only for about 2 years. So what's going to happen with our legislation? Are we just going to wait until another federal mandate says we have to alter our tax system in the state, then you can apply the same legislation?
Are you talking about the standard deduction?
Mm-hmm.
Well, the standard deduction was not a 2 year thing. It was a permanent change made by the federal government in the tax rate. There's a separate credit that only applies for 2 years, the new jobs credit, which I talked about earlier. By putting in a specific standard deduction for Alaska income tax purposes, Alaska income taxpayers would get that deduction no matter what changes the federal government made in the future in terms of treating it as a credit or changing the tax payment again. We would have our own deduction separate from the federal deduction.
Thank you.
I take it the standard deduction applies to everyone, not just those people that fill out the short form, but everyone.
Yeah, that's one of the other ramifications of this, because it not only affects people who took standard deduction, it also affects those people that itemized, because as you know, previously people had an option, either taking a standard deduction or itemizing their deductions, whichever was higher. Now the federal government has changed their system so that everybody gets the benefit of the standard deduction, which they call zero bracketing. It applies to everybody. And then people have a chance of claiming itemized deductions which exceed standard deduction. So everybody gets a standard deduction. Let's say you file a joint return, and that amount is $3,200. Okay. If you have itemized deductions of, say, $6,000, then you can take that extra $2,800 as what's called excess itemized deductions. So it does affect everybody.
And the bill that you're putting in would, in the first instance, change our tables to correspond to the to the change in the federal tables, right? That isn't incorporated automatically. And then, in addition, give you the ability to automatically rebate for this year.
Yeah, except instead of changing our tables, we would allow a permanent deduction, a standard deduction, equal to what the law. So you stay the same as you would have filed a return, let's say, last year.
Mr. Chairman, I noticed in the yellow book here that you have a state-by-state per capita comparison on tax rates on wine, malt beverage, distilled spirits, cigarettes, gasoline. Do you have the same information available on a comparative basis as far as state individual income tax is concerned?
Yeah, we have. Actually, I don't have that with me, but that's something I can put for you.
Thank you.
Any further questions for Mr. Messenger? Thank you, John. Credenza?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And the House Finance Committee. If you hear a rumble or a roar over the microphone system, it's not really a bull or a bear stampeding through here. It's really my stomach that's thinking. We have this morning to talk about the general fund and the rate of return and the performance of the general fund over the last year. And I'm giving you a chart on the last five fiscal years, 73 through 77. You can see from 73, starting with a general fund balance of $751.1 million, we declined in 1975 to $589.4 million, which is a very low point, and subsequently increased to $795.5 million. I think Vince has explained some of the reasons for those changes in the amounts in the general fund balances. On the chart on the right, referring to rates of return, you can see a graph depicting the different rates of return we've received under the general fund management, given the different market conditions, and given the different amounts of money we've had under management. And some of the more technical aspects of the market conditions, which I don't feel that I'm qualified to answer if you do have questions, I do have with me the investment officer who's responsible for managing the portfolio for the security markets in the general funds, Mr. Bill Meehan. In 1973, the general fund earned a realized rate of return of 5.54%. 1974, where we had a low point in general fund revenues, we had a high point in rates of return, 8.76%. And finally, in 1977, we've had a realized rate of return of 6% overall. Should point out to you that these are average balances for the year. These are the amounts under management on average throughout each fiscal year, and the rates of return are arithmetic average. They are not a time-weighted average rate of return. Converting those to dollars, in fiscal year 77, the general fund earned $38.8 million on its investment. Comparing that to 1975, the general fund earned $36.6 million. In 1973, the general fund earned $43.7 million. So there's been a fluctuation in the amounts earned given the market conditions and the amounts of general fund revenues under management.
Jim, is this what is an average balance mean? Does that mean, for instance, that if we started paying, made our payroll every week instead of every month, that the average balance would decline?
That's correct. That's correct. Given the wage contract or the contract with the unions, the state is mandated to pay at least 4 days prior to the end of the month or the end of the pay period. I believe for the month of December, month of January, excuse me, of 78, the mid-month payroll went out on January 6th. And I expect for holidays that it goes out at least 3 to 4 days earlier than that.
On a yearly basis, is the balance greater at the beginning than at the end, or is it?
In the past, it has been, but there's been a change with the completion of the pipeline. The balances now should begin to increase on a monthly basis because we're now getting a cash flow, a substantial cash flow from the pipeline on a monthly basis. Whereas in the past several years, the taxes were received at the end of the year, and that made a substantial difference in the planning for investments and the characteristics of the investments. Now, you can take advantage of investment opportunities on a monthly basis, whereas in the past, you had to plan all your investment opportunities at the end of the year.
And at the end of the year, when you clear your books, if you have a surplus, you still have extra money in the general fund, does that go automatically to the next year's general fund balance?
That's correct. In addition, the previous accounting procedures lumped all income from the investment of the general fund together. That includes all the business loans, all the agricultural loans, the fishing loans, and the security markets investments. I think we are now initiating a procedure which will allow us to distinguish the amounts of dollars that we're obtaining from the investment portfolio. In an answer to Representative Hogan's question, on the loan and mortgage programs, the state of Alaska, I can give you the dollar amount for the month of November, month end November 30th, 1977. We have not received the final amount for the month of December. But under the state loan programs, we had $205 million invested. Breaking those down specifically, $420,000 in agriculture, commercial fishing was $9.7 million, fisheries enhancement, $1.4 million, small business, $8.6 million, tourism, $9.6 million, and the veterans loan is the largest, $175.2 million. The total amount of loans invested throughout the state amounted to $258 million from the state general fund. Of the surplus, that's about one-third.
Leo? Do you classify those as liquid assets, and are they included in this average balance?
No, sir, I would not classify them as liquid assets, and yes, they are included as the average balance. They are investments for the state. They are represent securities. We do have loan mortgages and notes on file. And in that regard, yes, they are assets. They are what I would classify for the state as a long-term portfolio. The marketable securities account and the operating account represent $409.3 million as of the month end, November 30th, 1977.
Are these figured at 100% value in this reporting?
Those are at cost that I'm reporting. If you'd like me to give you the prior months or the actual market value, I'd have to go back and
do some calculations. I know it wouldn't be 100%. Not likely, I'll put it that way.
Right. Chairman, what do we have in Alaska Housing Finance Corporation? You know, offhand?
On November 30th, we had $19.6 billion with AHSC notes.
Are those ones that use the Treasury has purchased, like they do the veterans loans, or is that just...
Those are obligations of the state corporation.
Mm-hmm.
And unless I'm missing something, that's about the extent of it. For Alaska State Housing Authority, we have $10.3 million. Alaska State Development Corporation, $1 million, or $553,000, excuse me. Mortgage Insurance, $1 million, and U of A notes, $3.3 million.
That's Jim, with regard to illiquid assets, you have about $259 million. As I recall, you're forecasting over $300 million for 279.
That's correct. The largest and fastest growing portfolio is the veterans loan portfolio for the state loan program.
In that forecast, are you still remaining approximately one-third, or is it increasing of the total?
Senator, I really can't answer that, but just off the top of my head, I would think that it would start decreasing. The amount of new revenue coming into the state from the pipeline would increase at a greater rate than the increase in the veterans loans or any of the loan programs. Unless, of course, we were to give the administration or the legislature the mandate an increase in activity.
I don't see why. You're anticipating $928 million for 79 unrestricted revenue. Your budget comes up to approximately that amount, or it will by the end of this session anyway.
So I don't see why, where you're increasing any more revenues coming into the state that you aren't utilizing in the budget.
I don't believe I understood your first question.
The amount of illiquid assets that you're putting into different loans is going over $300 million. And we have $600 and some million of unrestricted revenue right now that are over and above the budgeted amount of expenditures. For 79, you're anticipating $928 million of unrestricted revenue coming in. However, your budget is $914 million, $915 million.
Yeah.
I don't see why the percentage of the one third basis that you're using now would change any. In fact, it would increase up to approximately one half, wouldn't it? Even though
that
you're getting more revenue coming
that,
in,
that
your
might
expenditure.
Be the rate of expenditure, given the revenue flow, that's correct. That might be the rate of growth in the Veterans Loan Program, which is the largest loan program, has been between $3 and $5 million per month. The conservative estimate would put that at growth of roughly $36 to $40 million for the next for the fiscal year 79. A large or a liberal estimate would put it closer to $50 to $60 million in growth.
What's the dollar amount of liquid assets that would have anticipated in your forecast for 79, after 79?
After 79, I believe I have to look at the revenue source book. I don't have that.
Okay.
Well, Jim, I seem to remember that the veterans loans, since the Treasury has to buy the veterans loans, and HSC had a sort of a cutback back in the middle of the summer somewhere. And didn't the veterans loans that you had, that the Treasury bought, increase dramatically because of that problem? Do you remember if that's true?
No, I don't believe so. I think the veterans loans was increasing dramatically regardless of what was happening with Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. The advantages of the veterans loans are 7.5% with liberal repayment terms, and the banks like it because it's a guaranteed takeout.
Okay,
going to my next chart. Oh, one other final thing. The actual amount for the general fund for FY77 balance was $890.4 million. So there's a difference between the averaging balance and the actual balance. The next chart portrays the retirement system, public employees, PERS, and that's in the green, and teacher retirement system, that's in the orange, PERS, and comparing the average portfolio sizes for 1973 through 1977 fiscal years, you can see a dramatic increase or growth in the size of both funds, growing from public employees $68.7 million in 73 through $156.4 million in 77, and for teachers, the orange $66.2 million in 73 to $157.5 million in 77. The actual amount at the end of FY77 for the public employees was $190.4 million. So it would be off the chart up here. And the actual amount for the teachers for FY77, that would be June 30th, was 173.5. That would also be nearly off the chart. The actual amount as of 12/31/77, that's December, $216 million for the public employees, so it's much higher, and $192 million for teachers, so that also is much higher. Again, I'd like to point out these are average portfolio sizes, and the chart on the right is the rates of return, and again, that's an arithmetical average that does not represent a time-weighted rate of return. I did not have time to present that, and we've only done it for 3 years. This will be the fourth year and I think starting with next year we'll be able to present to you a time-weighted rate of return. But beginning in 1973 for the public employees, we had roughly a 4.9% rate of return, and teachers for that same year is 4.8%. Public employees dropped dramatically in 1974 and remained low in 1975, dropped to 2%, and in 1975 to 2.4%. After that, it began to increase 6.7% and 7.6%. Also in teachers in 1974, you had a dramatic, or roughly the same as 1973, that would be these two columns, of 4.8% and 4.5%. But in 1975, you had a dramatic drop in teachers where the rate of return on arithmetical average is 1.9%. Finally increasing in 1977, where you have a dramatic change in both the two systems, the teachers with 8.6%.
What's the reason for that?
The reason for some of the dramatic decreases that I can determine in evaluating the books both reflect the conditions in the market. As you recall, in 1974, 1975, and I think Mr. Means will bear this up, the securities industry, the security markets were not performing very well.
But the only reason I ask is that in 1974, on the regular unrestricted revenues, you had an 8.76% return.
That's on the general fund.
Right.
That's correct. Those
and that's
securities
a tremendous, were, dramatic difference in percentages.
Those securities were U.S. government securities and reflected the interest rates and market conditions for the U.S. government at that time.
Couldn't this also have been invested in government securities?
These were invested in government securities and in some equity. And prior to this, one of the reasons that you see a dramatic decrease in here and then a dramatic increase here, because in 1975 and 1976, the management began to input or invest more of its funds into mortgages and commercial loans within the state of Alaska, which are yielding an average of around 9 to 10.5%. For the time-weighted average rates of return on the portfolios, we are starting with 1975, we're receiving 11% for the public employees and 14% for the teachers. Through 1977, the time weighted rate of return is 10.5% for public employees and 11.5% for teachers.
Go ahead. Jim, what, I don't understand what you mean by time weighted.
The arithmetical average only includes the amount of income received from the investment. If you received $10 in interest over a period of a year, we divide that by 12 and that's your return.
Are you discounting for the present value of it or something? Or
no, we're not.
How about
just the arithmetical average?
The time weighted take into consideration inflation then?
Okay, time weighted rate of return includes portfolio appreciation, cash realized, plus inflation.
Well, generally, then the time weighted would be less.
No, that's not correct. The time weighted would be more. Time weighted average is gradually increasing when you take into consideration the effect of the inflation rate plus the change in the portfolio structure, especially illustrated here where you're getting into longer term securities at a very high interest rate. Okay, the actual dollar amounts for both of those interest earned, and there was not enough time to put these in a chart, so I'll give them to you verbally. In 1977, the public employees earned $12.6 million, and the teachers earned $13.6 million. In 1973, the public employees earned and teachers $3.2 million. And there's been a gradual increase over a number of years. I have one final chart to show you. If there are no further questions on this, I'll move right into that. That will be a chart just giving you the expected growth or expected size of the Alaska Permanent Fund under 25%, 50%, 75% contribution factors to it. I'll point out to you also that the chart represents royalty only. It does not include, as a basis, bonuses, federal mineral revenue sharing, mineral lease rentals, and royalty sale proceeds. It's exclusive of those. This is net royalty only. And the royalty accounts for approximately, and this is just kind of a rough thing, 90% or more of the total amounts received given the definition of the permanent fund sources. The basis for the estimates beginning in 1978, the Department of Revenue estimated $207.2 million in 1978, in 1979, $348.8 million, and in 1980, $447 million. 81, 717, 82, 806, those are all in millions. In 1983, we see an increase of 1 billion, 20 million, 1 billion, 118 million, and 1 billion, 219 million for the basis for these particular estimates on contribution. At the 25% contribution factor, given those that set of numbers for the estimates, we see a permanent fund in 1978 at 25% of roughly $51.8 million. That would be here. This is a low factor. Growing to $304.9 million. That would be here. Roughly $305 million. At 50%, we see a permanent fund of roughly $103 million. Growing to $610 million approximately over here through 1985. And finally, at 75%, $155.4 million, growing to just under $1 billion by 1985 at that contribution rate. Again, that does not include any of the other variables that are involved.
From where I looked, 1985 looks like 25%. I can't read the number, but it looks on a chart that it's between 200 and 300. Mm-hmm. Is the number 300? Yep.
This number is $304.9 million. The actual balance of the permanent fund as of the end of December was approximately $25 million, and it's invested in corporate U.S. government securities. And we also have a savings account where we accumulate for investment purposes. And the average yield on that is roughly 7.7%.
Okay, then the 51.8 for 78 is the revised estimate. This estimate is 55.043.
These are approximate numbers.
Mr. Chairman, throughout all these figures, you're assuming the present known production of oil, is that correct? Or are you assuming that other fields will be opened up?
No, these are on the Prudhoe Bay production only.
Okay, what about gas production? What is Prudhoe Bay?
This does include gas production.
Prudhoe Bay gas production?
Yes.
All right, thank you.
I think one of the reasons that you see a dramatic increase in the amount or the size of the permanent fund in 1982-1983 because we anticipate completely paying out the Alaska Native Fund by that time.
Mr. Chairman, are you going to prepare for us a chart that includes all of the non-renewable return to the permanent fund that only deals with two categories, oil and gas? Are you going to prepare a chart for us that can give it all to us?
I think that's possible, yes.
Thank you.
I think if that's your request, we'll have to do that.
Mr. Chairman, Jim, I know that the farther you get out in projections, the less reliable they get, but by 1985, it's still increasing. But does the permanent fund balance decrease at some point, along with the decrease in production from crude oil? Have you done long-run projections on that? But the rate of increase.
We have not done that. We just carry ours up to 1985. That's pretty hard to plan beyond there. Suppose next year the pump station number 3, God forbid, goes down.
Well, I understand that, but the problem is a couple of these other projections, which I'm sure you're familiar with, like the ICER study and a couple that done in-house the legislature. Up to 1985, everything looks pretty good, including the surplus in the Treasury and in the permanent fund. But after that, given different assumptions, and it makes a big difference which assumption you get. Some of the projections show that by 1987 we start having to draw down the surplus, and by the first part of 1990s the surplus goes to zero. Now, I know that the confidence in that projection way out there is very small, but it seems to me that if we're going to try to figure out what kind of average rate we want to increase the budget, which is a key factor in all this, that we have to sort of at least have something to go on. And I'm wondering if you guys are going to come in with a longer run projection, because last year we just went to 85, I remember, and everything looked pretty good. And I've been making all my judgments based on that more rosy picture. And you look a couple of years farther, and it doesn't look so good.
I agree, it's very desirable to do that. And I think ISER did attempt to carry their projections on revenues and expenditures beyond 1990. If you believe their assumptions, and if you assume that everything is going to remain the status quo with no dramatic changes in the tax laws or the federal regulations applicable to the state royalty oil, royalty gas taxes, and oil and gas, then you can assume that it will remain the status quo, and that will be good. And by 1990, if you believe ISER's report, then heaven help the legislators and the person who's governor.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman,
Can you tell me once more what the projection is for 1985, the cumulative fund balance for the permanent fund on your chart up there?
On the chart?
At 25%.
Yeah, 25%. For 1985, we're now forecasting an amount of $304.9 million. Which is substantially less than what was forecast.
Substantial, I think, is an understatement of the word. Last year on January the 26th, when the Department of Revenue made a projection, they said that 25%, and 1985, the permanent fund cumulative balance would be $1,905,000,000. And I'm a little leery of your projections, and I was trying when I was talking about that.
Okay, what you need to do here, well, is accumulate, and I don't have that immediately in front of me, to accumulate the amount given here. This is the contribution only for 1985.
It says balances, but it means contribution.
Right. This is the fund. Well, that's this number then. Yeah. This amounts to the contribution at 25% at that particular year.
Oh.
Does not represent the total amount in the permanent fund.
Just the annual.
Yeah. That's the annual contribution.
It's not the cumulative amount, it's the contribution in any given year.
Right.
Balance.
You have a projection for the balance?
Well, if I could plug in my Hewlett Packard right here, I'd be able to tell you. That would be roughly $1.4 billion.
Any further questions of Mr. Denzo? Any questions on revenue?
This is a little off the subject, what you're talking about, but could you you tell us what the tariff is per barrel on oil from the West Coast to the West Coast? The figures you used in this wellhead price.
I think I might defer that question to Vincent Wright, who knows more about tariffs than I do.
You got to go?
I can talk to you later.
Okay. We're going to have to adjourn. No, thank you very much.